From the shores of Puget Sound, this is Greener Views, a unique media resource for information, education, consultation, and fun. Greener Views is a part of the Healthy Homecast Network and is brought to you exclusively by HealthyPainting.com and AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. Each episode will introduce and connect you with services, products, practices, organizations, and groups that focus on the health, happiness, safety, well-being, charity, and community of all. Find us on the web at www.greenerviews.net. And now, your host, Daryl Whalen.
Okay, well, good evening and welcome to episode 35 of Greener Views. I'm Daryl Whalen, and I'm here with audio engineer Randy Parcell, video engineer Michael Schwartz, and joining us this evening is Basha Brownstein from Cancer Lifeline. Mm-hmm. Good evening. Greener Views is part of the Healthy Homecast Network. It's brought to you exclusively by HealthyPainting.com and AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. To advertise, sponsor a program or an episode, or donate, contact interviews at greenerviews.net. And we're working on having our website and everything all redone, and we're going to have buttons and stuff and all kinds of hoopla about that on there. So let's see. How do I know the guest? We met at the PCC, and I was in there checking out the kombucha, and it was last year sometime, and I got to talking about the podcast and got to talking about kombucha and got to talking a little bit about Cancer Lifeline. And I'll be completely honest with you, I didn't know anything about Cancer Lifeline at the time. She just seemed like a really, really cool gal, and just had a lot of fun talking with her. And so here we go. I contacted her recently, and she came on, and I'm really excited about it. So welcome, and thanks for joining us this evening.
Thank you, Darren.
We're going to get started. Tell us briefly, what is Cancer Lifeline?
Well, Cancer Lifeline has been around for over 40 years. We have our 40th anniversary next year. We've been, all that time, our backbone has been a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week emotional support telephone line. About 14 years ago, 13 years ago, we morphed, in addition to being a line and offering classes at that point off-site. We bought basically the old PCC and in the Green Lake area, and we have owned it for the past 13 years. So we provide programming at that site, and then over the years we've also added contracted sites at three hospitals, Northwest Hospital, Evergreen Hospital, and Valley Medical Center.
So you say it's been about 40 years. So who was responsible for the starting, and what was the, is it the impetus? Is that the right word?
Yeah, that's a good word. It was a woman named Gloria Gutkowski. She lived on the peninsula, and she had a recurrent cancer. This is back in 1973, and she felt like she wanted, because her cancer had come back, and I think in the cancer has changed, the face of cancer has changed dramatically over the years. So now it, for many cancers, it's almost like a chronic illness, the way AIDS has become for many people. Mm-hmm. But back then, I think she felt like it would have been too great a burden to have advanced cancer for her husband, and she wanted a larger community that would support both she and other people out in the world who were facing the same thing. So she brought together about 25 people. She must have been a mover and a shaker, and brought together a group of people that she knew, and you know, physicians that she interacted with as a patient, and basically set up this telephone line that would be of service to people that were going through similar things.
So. We love the movers and shakers here at Greener Views.
Indeed.
We talk, it's right in our little motto there,
yes.
The forerunners of change. Was there, so Was there anybody else doing anything like that at the time that you know of?
I don't think so. No. If there were, I don't know who they were. I mean, certainly the American Cancer Society has been around for a long time, but in terms of this being a local, it started off. I mean, now our line, because we're on the web and all, we get people calling from all over the place. But but back then it was based, Washington based.
Yeah. Maybe even mostly Seattle.
Mostly,
even.
Yeah. Yeah. Or not even Seattle because she was on the peninsula. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, interesting. Yeah. So what is your position and your specific role and responsibilities?
Well, it's morphed. I was brought on 14 years ago to start the Healing Arts for Creative Expression program, and I still have a very special spot in my heart for creative expression as it relates to healing. Mm. But my responsibilities have increased over time, and now I basically develop and set the classes for the main site at the Dorothy O'Brien Center. And also at the Northwest Hospital site. So I do bring in nutritionists to do nutrition classes and meditation folks and exercise physiologists and artists and just all sorts of people. I consider myself a trawler. I research lots and lots on the web and other places and just hear what's going on out there and what people are saying they need and want that will help it be in the service of their healing. And I think one of my jobs is basically to look for well-researched but cutting-edge modalities that will be of service to people in their healing process. And I should say that I distinguish between healing and curing because you can heal no matter what's going to happen with your body.
Yeah.
And curing is up to the fates in many cases.
Hmm. I know what I was thinking about before was, about 40 years ago, you said that this had started. I wonder what the general attitude was towards cancer and people with cancer and how it's changed over the last 40 years.
I think, 40 years ago, I mean, I think many more people felt like it was a death sentence.
Yeah.
And there was much more of a hush-hush quality about it. I mean, I know in a previous job, I was a program director at a senior center. And the first time I had cancer, ladies would come up to me as I was, doing something at my desk. And they'd like pat me on the shoulder and say, there, dear, it's going to be okay. In a very, hushed way. Voice, not because God forbid any, I mean, I had never known that they were cancer survivors. So it was something you didn't share. I think you just sort of, you toughed it out. You kind of went through your own quiet, dark night of the soul.
Yeah.
Without feeling like you could really share with that many people.
And now it's, how do you see it being now?
It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, I certainly know firsthand and from seeing folks that walk through the door, I mean, they walk through in crisis and it certainly is. And it's a life-changing one. But as strange as it may seem, my experience of the Dorothy O'Brien Center is that it's also a very joyous place. And there's a lot of, I call it being hit by the cosmic 2x4. And we folks are sort of, we tend to be a little dense. Just it's just our nature to be that way, myself included. And it's not until something hits us, the cosmic 2x4 hits us, and it could be addictions. It could be a divorce. It could be a terrible illness. In this case, it's a terrible illness. And it brings people up short. And it says, what do you want to do with your life? And it's sort of like a little crack in the force field, if you will, that people often stop and say, okay, why am I here? What do I want to do with my life? I don't just want to stick one foot in front of the other and, have my next, my fancy iPod and, have a fancy car and make lots of money or, and not see my children and not experience, what it's like to smell, you know, a beautiful spring day. It changes people. And I feel like I live in a rarefied world because most of my day at Cancer Lifeline is encountering people like that.
So it's not like this doom and gloom like all day long. It's certainly a part of it, but really yes. Now we're living in a world and where adversity is the gateway to empowerment and stuff.
It can be.
I mean,
you know, and it's, I mean, I'll give you an example. This happened just Saturday and, we had a number of classes on Saturday. We do African drumming. There was a Dance for Joy class. There was a class and we do something called Small Steps to Big Changes to help people actualize change, whatever that is, if they want to change their diet or they want to get into an exercise program and basically, chunking it down into bite-sized pieces so that it's not overwhelming for them and having a group of coming together in a group to support one another in that change. Well, that was all going on, and this one woman, excuse me, I would think she's in her 60s, came in and she danced up a storm, and then she went and she lay down on one of our couches. Our center is very homey, so, yeah. You know, people just make themselves at home. And I went over just to check her to see if she was okay, and she said, I had to come here today.
Mm.
My husband just died last night.
Wow.
And I had to honor him by dancing because he and I always danced together when he was healthy. And I knew that I could do that here. And, you know, I could feel all the feelings I had at that moment, but I could also be joyous and I would be embraced here, basically. And I was like, I was in tears. I mean, I was very, very touching. And we just sat together and we held each other's hand. And she just spoke about what adventures she had had with her husband, you know, when he had been healthy. That's a very precious moment to be able to do that. And I think Cancer Lifeline really, it allows you to be however you are in the moment. You're not defined by your cancer in this or a loved one's cancer. You're whoever you are. You're whole. You just happen to have you're either have an illness or you're supporting somebody with illness.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Thank you for that story. It's beautiful. It's that's what I mean by adversity being empowering. I mean, mm-hmm. I think what you were saying earlier is I don't really know that much about it, but I take that back. I do know a little bit about it. But say 40 plus years ago, people wouldn't necessarily go to a place like that or have a place to go. And people that were suffering with cancer or people that were, you know, in that, it would all be like behind closed doors and it would
right.
be all at home and it would be considered this.
Right.
But this is an opportunity for, I mean, I think with all the cancer races and all the success stories and the people with the media and everything, one of the upsides of media and the internet and everything is that we're being exposed to a lot of people that have had the successes and everything from cancer
mm-hmm.
and stuff, as opposed to it being, you know, not such a fortunate thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the target clientele. I mean, it's obviously the people that have cancer, the people who's we talked about this on the phone a little bit, people, the family members, people that might be just searching for information. Can you go into a little bit more about the target clientele of Cancer Lifeline?
Well, our mission is basically to provide quality of life services, not non-medical services, to anyone touched by cancer.
Mm.
And for better or for worse, in our culture, that's just about everyone.
Yeah.
You could be a currently diagnosed person. You could be a survivor. I know people who have been coming to Cancer Lifeline. It's basically become their community center. And I've known them for the entire 13 going on 14 years that I've been at Cancer Lifeline. You could be a coworker, a friend, a loved one, a professional who provides services. So that's pretty much anyone. And we don't, you know, the services are completely free. It's in some ways, I mean, and indeed now I think we've turned a corner where we're really, more and more people are coming in and our classes have huge wait lists. But for a while there, it felt like we were the most closely guarded secret in Seattle because people should have been, you know, chomping at the bit to get to our classes.
It just takes time.
It does, yeah.
I saw that book over there that you gave me with all the classes. That thing was pretty thick. It looks like you've got a...
It's pretty awesome.
Quite a workload.
Yeah.
So how did you get involved with Cancer Lifeline? How did you start working there?
Well, I'm a social worker.
Oh, okay.
I went to social work school in Boston. I basically for a long while I felt like, you know, art, I had a choice before I went to social work school. It was either social work school or art. I was going to go to Banff to do weaving. And I decided on social work, community organizing. And I felt, once I made that choice, I felt that, there wasn't any room for art. Art was fluff.
Mm.
And, you know, I worked with the homeless. I worked in public housing. And eventually I got cancer.
Mm.
I'm not saying that, you know, it's quite cause and effect, but, you know, I felt like there was a piece of me that was, that I had cast off at my own peril. So, I basically, it was the late 90s, and I decided, I had had cancer in 94. I decided I wanted a job that worked with cancer and art in some fashion, or creative expression in some fashion. And I started cold calling all the places I could think of in Seattle and Tacoma.
Good for you.
Because I was moving to Vashon Island.
Hmm.
And I happened to bump into an amazing woman named Barbara Frederick, who was not the first director of Cancer Lifeline, but basically put it on the map in terms of, and was the one who created the center with the help of she and a wonderful board. And we just started talking, and then she called me back and said, "Dear, do you have a resume?" And, I was carrying them around like a hot watch, and I faxed it to her immediately. And then the next is history.
Wow.
So it was a meant to be. And it was incredible, being somewhere, you know, it's the ground up basically in developing this program in a very community-based model. So we started off with focus groups. We called in the different folks from various parts of the community, survivors, patients, artists, you know, asking, what do you want to see? If there was a creative expression program, what would it look like? And, people just really got very, very involved in it. And we set up a guiding group that met every month, and we basically developed the program.
Yeah, and we now know that there's an incredible... So when you were talking about earlier not necessarily seeing... Now, how do I say this? Now it's very apparent what the connection between art and healing and social work all is. And at one time, it was like it didn't seem like it matched.
Well, I think our culture has gone through a place of where, you know, mind and body were distinct entities, and the body is like a car that you tinker with to make it better. And I think we're coming to a place, maybe not everyone, but I think more and more people are understanding.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Yeah, that you know, the mind, body, the spirit, the emotions, everything is all connected, and you can't forsake one. You know, it has to be integrated.
Is it safe to say that a place like Seattle is a really good place for something like that? Or is
I would
necessarily
I would
so?
Say so. Yeah. I mean, my experience of Cancer Lifeline, I always refer to it as a field of dreams, because people just come through the door with amazing talents that they want to offer and share with folks. It's just remarkable. We just did a six hour class with a woman, a PhD nurse who's trained as a hypnotherapist and did a therapeutic self-hypnosis. And it just, I mean, it knocked my socks off. And I think and we had like 50 people in the room. I mean, there was almost standing room only. And just the impact that, you know, your attitude and your focused intention, the impact that can have on you. And people were really, really, really interested in that.
I imagine you've seen a lot of things in the last, you say, 14 years, huh?
Yeah.
So from your own perspective, what are you most passionate about as it relates to this work, and why is this work so important?
Well, I think personality-wise, this is an ideal job for me because I have many interests.
Yeah.
I mean, I went to art school at the U of Dub in Fibers. I mean, I have... But my passion in bringing people together in community to develop something, it's almost the process of creation is part of the healing process. So we've done three large installation pieces at the Healing Journeys conferences that happened over the last decade at Meany Hall. They're an organization that hails out of California. Healing Journeys from Surviving to Thriving. And we basically, with a community of about 35 folks, developed, you know, what would be the story? What would be the storyboard that would be used to tell this particular story of healing? And then we'd manifest that. So whether we used bathing suit forms that come from Costco, the clear bathing suit forms that you would normally toss. Well, people use that as to create images of their story. And storytelling is extremely important in the healing process. I don't care what it is. I mean, Native people certainly knew that, and we've lost that connection, and I think we're coming back to it. But we're more than our stories, but before we can release our stories, we have to tell our stories, and the stories have to be heard. And creative expression is a very powerful tool for telling your story, whether that's writing, poetry, whether that's some kind of visual art, whether that's dancing, whether that's singing, they're all, you know, whether that's working in the garden, that's all part of, it can all be part of you telling your story. And the pain of your story and the healing process of your story. So that's basically what we certainly used in those conferences. We used, you know, we did the portal of transformation, and we actually created through PVC pipe and a whole bunch of other stuff, this actually walkthrough journey of the experience of cancer with rivers and hanging things and trees, and then we did a the forest of transformation, and that was 10 trees that we constructed that told the story, you know, and that we've done some pretty big projects.
Great. So you'd sent over some information beforehand, and we talked about a little bit of it. You say that Washington State has the highest incident of breast cancer per capita in the nation?
Yeah. I don't know why. It's a hot spot.
I never would have thought about that, or I never heard that before. And is there any ideas why that's the case?
I certainly don't know why.
Wow. So another thing was the effect the recession has had on cancer patients. Do you want to talk about that a little bit, the basic needs of cancer patients?
It's huge. One of the services that we offer is a navigation program, financial navigation. Which offers woefully little money when that's available, but we also help people connect with other services to the extent that we're able to. But people are going through cancer being in homeless shelters.
Yeah.
You know, or being close to being that in homeless shelters. It's pretty scary.
Relatively healthy people are going through the same thing.
Totally.
Could you imagine having a situation like that, a challenge like that to live with on top of it?
No.
Jeez.
No. I mean, I can remember a man who coming into the center, this is a while ago, who his wife was about to start treatment and they were going to be evicted.
Yeah.
And he was at his wit's end. He had no idea what he was going to do.
Yeah. Humanity. So let's see, the one thing that you'd mentioned was about uninsured cancer patients have a life expectancy. Twice as likely to die within 5 years sooner of people that are insured.
Well,
uninsured versus insured.
It certainly makes
not having the resources and stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It absolutely. I mean, let's face it. If you can't, you know, if you're at the mercy.
Yeah.
I mean, I think services were never that great that were offered. You know, at the largesse of the cancer service, this cancer world. But I mean, now that there are fewer and fewer, I mean, I don't think people have as many options.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to keep myself kind of quiet about that because I got a lot of thoughts about that in a country, like in a world or a planet at all that goes on is one thing, but especially like a place like America, which is at one time was probably one of the wealthiest countries on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even so sure that we're giving the right type of message in life in general about how to prevent cancer and stuff like that in life. Are we? Or
well, certainly there's. I mean, you see more and more the connection between nutrition and exercise, and that's certainly an important piece of the story. It's not the only piece. I mean, one of the kinds of classes we also offer are things like Safer for You and for the Earth, which is, you know, safer household cleaning products. And to the extent that people can take some control in that.
Yeah.
There are some things they don't have control, you know, your previous guest who spoke about air quality. Well, you might not in the immediacy have control over air quality. Maybe you can, you know, maybe you can stop driving a car, but a lot of other people are driving cars. There's the, you know, factories that are spewing stuff. There's, you know, all sorts of ways that we're being polluted in that way. So, you know, you don't have immediate control.
Hmm.
And there are all the chemicals that are out there. I mean, there are thousands and thousands of chemicals. And, you know, the scientific method is such that we tend to review one chemical in isolation, but we're not talking about one chemical in isolation. We're talking about a chemical soup, and we don't have a clue, I don't think, how some chemicals affect one another, how they potentiate one another. You know, and unfortunately, the principle of do no harm is not really one that's used in this country. Before something goes on the market.
That or the golden rule.
Right.
So let's talk about the 24-hour hotline. How does that work? And give us a little bit of idea about what kind of stuff goes on there.
The 24-hour emotional support line, basically you can call anytime. We have a very high level of training for our volunteers and we also have staff people that take the line. And you can talk anonymously if you want, but there's somebody there to listen. The credo of the line is basically you're not there to solve any problem because you can't solve somebody else's problem. You're there to listen and to just, you know, reflect back to people where it's appropriate, but mostly just listen and tell people that you care, and help them sort things out so that they come to whatever decision or, you know, that they're trying to sort out, if that's appropriate. But you don't have the answer, which you don't.
So what is the most common story that people are calling up to tell or
Well, if they've been just diagnosed, I mean, they're freaked out. You know, if they're young, a young mother with children, you know, am I going to be around for my, to see my children graduate from school? It could be, a partner, you know, worried about, you know, what to say or what not to say. It could be a friend saying, you know, I want to be supportive, but I don't know how. I mean, all the things, all the emotional things that come up for people that, that sometimes make people clench and not share. We also do, family meetings where if a patient survivor, is interested in calling a meeting, and then however they configure their family, and that's, you know, could be a friendship network, whatever the friendship, friendship or family network, just to help them sort out the complications of communication. What do I do? Does my child know, my 4-year-old child, what do I tell him or her? You know, and you know that they know. They might know in a different way from us.
Kids know more than we think.
Yeah, but they know. So what do I say? You know, how much do I say?
Yeah, interesting. Wow. So tell us a little bit about the nutrition classes.
Nutrition classes are awesome.
Wow.
They are awesome. We have, our philosophy is to really provide just whole food nutrition, information. We have, the teachers we have been trained at Bastyr for the most part. They're excellent and they vary. Some, eat meat and, do demonstrations with cooking, where meat is almost like a condiment, not like a side of a cow. But, you know, it's supposed to be the size of a deck of cards is the amount of meat you're supposed to eat in one meal, the maximum amount. But it would be grass fed, talking about organic food, why that's important. And then we have vegan, people.
Any raw foodists?
We haven't done as much raw food, but we're getting into that. I mean, my attitude is like, I want to just, our culture knows what to do with meat. We don't know what to do with beans and with vegetables. We tend not to, you know, and we look at, kale as if it just landed from Mars. So teaching people how to use those things and actually having demonstrations where people get to sample tempeh and kale in some yummy sauce and they go, oh my gosh, this really is good, is fantastic. So it's giving people little, you know, niblets of like, this isn't so hard because none of the recipes are like, you know, cordon bleu. You know, that's not the point of it. It's like, this is simple. You can do this. You can make this really healthy. We do smoothie classes. So raw, you know.
Green smoothies.
Oh, yeah.
There's a tremendous amount of, work and healing and progress that's been done, in the cancer area with raw vegan diets and stuff like that.
You know, there's been healing done with lots of things.
Yeah.
We don't ever, say people who come into a place like Cancer Lifeline are desperate.
Yeah.
And being a 2-time cancer survivor myself, I mean, the horrible truth is cancer, like most illnesses, is a crapshoot.
Yeah.
And I know people who have done everything right and they are pristine.
Yeah.
And they're no longer with us.
It's like the folks that smoke and drink until they're 95 and, you know, they're hopping and skipping. And then there's folks like, I want to talk and maybe before we end about a couple of the cancer stories that I have in my life, that people that had died when they were like 30, 40 years old and
right.
like they were healthy. And
right.
Yeah. I understand.
Now that doesn't mean that you don't say, you know, it's much better to eat like, you know, 9 portions of greens and healthy vegetables, preferably organic.
Yeah.
However much time you have, you're probably going to feel a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, but to say that anything, we shy away from, you know, if you do this, then this.
Oh, yeah. You know, I was just making a general statement.
Yeah. I mean, that certainly is true. And I know folks like that too.
So what about the exercise and movement classes? Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
We really cater to people who either have never exercised or are extremely debilitated as a result of their treatment. So it's gentle yoga. And it really, it certainly combines things like, you know, meditation and, you know, mindfulness practice plus simple stretches. We do something called LaBed, which is the founder, Shirley LaBed Davis, created with her two brothers in response to family and Sherry's own breast cancer, where she developed lymphedema, which lymphedema arises from the lymph system being impaired by radiation or surgery. So it can be upper body or lower body, but if that happens, then the lymph tends to pool and can cause incredibly debilitating situations where people do not have a quality of life at all.
Yeah.
So this is a form of fun lymphatic drainage. And Sherry, being Sherry, has groupies in her class. People, because she's like a stand-up comic in addition to being a wonderful teacher. So we have about between 20 and 25 people in that class. And every week they will do these dance routines that really encourage lymphatic drainage to help either prevent or mitigate the symptoms of lymphedema. So there's that. There's stretch and strength. So light resistance training. We have Feldenkrais, which is extremely gentle, you know, and really helps.
Did we have Feldenkrais on the show? Yeah, we had a Feldenkrais show.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Great guy, Eric.
Okay.
Eric Lasore from Alki Moves.
I know him.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
I think he's subbed with us.
He probably has. That's the kind of guy he is.
Yes, he's wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sort of almost like an inner meditation. So it's you learning from the inside out what is not efficient movement and what can I do to change that. So it's you becoming aware. So a lot of what it is we do is an awareness, become aware, and then take it from there.
So, and just like the diet that we talked about, the tremendous amount of healing. Of course, it is a crapshoot, but a tremendous amount of healing has been done with just the right type of exercise and stuff.
Absolutely.
And it's not always the quantity of life, it's the quality of life. And just like you had mentioned, how we know we eat properly, how it can make us feel, the right kind of exercise. I used to do yoga a lot more regularly than I embarrassed to say that I don't do now, but it made me feel fantastic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And the other piece that they're discovering, which in addition to exercise, is sedentariness, which in addition to exercising, if you don't get up and move every like half hour, there's new evidence coming out about that.
Oh, they say that about people that work in you know, computers and stuff all day.
To be inefficient and get up and move around. And that's really because our bodies were meant to move.
I had heard that sitting too long without a chair without being moving around will like negate a certain amount of exercise that you might actually be doing.
Right. And that's why some people are actually, putting their computers on pedestals or on treadmills, mounting them. So they're actually, you know, like a gerbil, but they're moving, you know, and standing, you know, and it's supposed to be healthy.
I spend too much time on my computer, that's for darn sure. So I understand that Cancer Lifeline doesn't receive any public or government support.
We mostly private donations. I want to say 70%. We have our hospital contracts in the three hospitals that we have that give us, it's corporate.
Yeah.
You'd say corporate sponsorship for services rendered.
Yeah.
And then we have in the past we've had a Komen grant for some of the financial services for people with breast cancer. But by and large, it's private donations. And, you know, I think we're seeing more and more people come in need. And certainly, you know, we're still offering the services for free. But we definitely need those donations.
So is there a national resource for this specific type of, do you know of any other places in the United States that are similar to the Cancer Lifeline?
We're pretty unique.
Pretty unique.
I mean, there's the cancer, there's the cancer community, like down in, California, but we're our own entity. There's Gilda's Club on Capitol Hill. That's a national organization that Gilda Radner and her family developed.
Of course, she's very big in that stuff. Yeah,
they're across from the Polyclinic.
Okay. Is it something relatively similar?
It certainly has similarities.
So there is a place that people can go to get, obviously not something just like the Cancer Lifeline, but there's places that people can go to get some type of support or
absolutely.
Some of this
stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Do you know of a national resource or something where people, let's say, because we do have an audience here. This is on the internet, so it can go just about anywhere, and we've gotten responses and stuff from people out, certainly outside of Washington State. If somebody was in, had a family member or themselves or something looking for this type of support, can they call the Cancer Lifeline?
Oh, they can certainly call the Cancer Lifeline. Yeah. Absolutely.
Do you have resources for people in different states and stuff? Or
we would, different states would be hard.
Yeah.
We certainly would do the emotional support.
Yeah.
But, you know, things like there's something called Cancer Care that's located out of New York, and that has also a line. And they also do podcasts or webinars of particular cancers.
Hmm.
So informationals. There's the Cancer Information Service, which is actually based physically at the Hutch. Their phone service during the week, I think it's 9 to 4 or 5 Monday through Friday, and they're medically focused. So
yeah.
You can call up with the particular kind of cancer you have and talk about what are the treatment modalities that are most likely to be offered at the
sure.
current time. So there's that.
Wow. Well, there's so much here. Well, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back with the rest of the interview.
You are listening to Greener Views.
Gravity connects me to the earth, which connects me to people who connect me to myself more honestly. And gravity connects me to the crust, which connects to the leaves on the trees that make it possible to breathe. With naive mind shield like a helmet, they would tell us that we don't know how we feel or how to connect with other people on the planet. Oh, if we only knew the power in each blue disillusioned little. In the vision of one resides all, destroy the individual, for this is critical. The self ain't everything, hands to grasp, to cling, to mask material vastly shipwrecked beings. At last, release the greed amassed with capitalist tasks and contact. The mass communication is all we have in dwindling fast.
Okay, welcome back to episode 35 of Greener Views. 35. We're here with Basha Brownstein. I didn't have it written down there, but I did remember it from Cancer Lifeline.
You got it.
So welcome back. Thanks so much. So who or what has had the greatest impact on your life so far?
Oh, my gosh. I think Barbara Frederick, for me, the original director. Her capacity to take the vision that she held of what she wanted that center to be and manifest it is just quite, quite remarkable. I mean, you walk in there, and one of our participants referred to it as experiencing a hug as you walk through the door, and just being able to sort of exhale. I have never experienced a building like that, it's very, very, very special, and that's a manifestation of her. And she also was able, she was able to, there's sort of a standard joke about her that, you know, nobody was ever able to say no to Barbara. Mm. So she was able to raise substantial amounts of money because we owned the building outright.
Yeah.
And just have this elegant, understated way about her in the process of doing that. So I think it was like you came to whatever it is you did as if it was your idea, but I think she was planning it all along, only you never realized it. She's masterful. And she's got a very big heart.
Great. Well, it's definitely contagious. I feel like I'm getting a big hug just by hanging out with you. Thank you for that. So what is the motto or the mission statement for your life?
My life.
Your life.
Oh my gosh. What is the motto or mission statement? You didn't tell me you were going to ask me that.
I told you I didn't send you the questions. I bet you got one.
I think to live authentically and basically, and to be of service, but in the context of living authentically, whatever that is. And I really believe in the healing power of community and bringing people together and finding ways to do that. I think our culture is woefully isolated in so many ways. And in point of fact, I think Cancer Lifeline, it happens to be cancer, but it is a healing space. And if more people engaged in the activities that Cancer Lifeline has to offer, whether they were able-bodied or not, the place, I think there'd be a lot less sadness and disturbance in the world because people would be living more authentically and searching out what's really important to them and what's important to them in relationship to the world that they live in.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, there's many people that are, from what my perspective, extremely healthy, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're very tuned in or very alive and really in touch with their own lives.
Right. I think the level of unconsciousness could put us at our own peril,
yeah.
I think. So I think it's a place where you can look at painful things in a very loving context and come out the other side in quite magical. I know that sounds very woo-woo.
It doesn't sound like
but,
it to me. That goes back to what I was saying in the beginning about challenges being empowering.
Right. Yeah. It's a pretty magical place.
Some of us have some pretty blessed lives, but we might not be living them very powerfully.
Right.
So what do you see as the main responsibility that we have to ourselves in our lifetime?
Well, I think living authentically, really finding out why we're here.
Yeah.
And what we should be doing, whatever that is. And I think we obscure that by, you know, living in a very fast world, living in a world that consumes all things that make us not slow down and really just come to know ourselves. I truly believe that we intrinsically know what we need to do inside of ourselves, and we just cover that up, you know, and I think that happens. There's a Buddhist philosopher named Joanna Macy. She's an ecologist, and her work is The Great Turning, and she talks about how we're animals on planet Earth, so we know what we're doing to our planet and ourselves, but because of the great pain that we experience, we turn away from the pain because we can't hold the gaze, and we need to hold the gaze to get through the pain to then come out on the other end. And I think that's in a small way, that's what happens at Cancer Lifeline, but that should be happening everywhere.
Yeah. Wow. Well, speaking outwardly, what responsibility do you see that we as individuals have to the planet and all of its inhabitants?
Oh.
In our lifetime.
Well, I think to live more modestly. I mean, to not live as if, I mean, we basically live as if the earth is a toilet. And
it's going to be around forever.
And we can just keep taking from it and then disposing of things. And, you know, clearly we can't do that. You know, we can maybe do it for a little bit more time, but it's not going to work. So it's like either change that or, you know, or not. And, you know, I have hope that Gaia will be here long past us. Mm. If, you know, we happen to caca the bed, we're expendable.
Yeah. No, great answer. Shouldn't be treating the world like a toilet, huh? The planet. So what is one thing that most any person can do to make a difference in this world?
Again, I think to stop. I mean, in some ways, to stop, to slow down, and to be grateful, to be grateful for what we have. I know there are ways. I've certainly gone through periods in my life where I have not. I've felt resentment and how that can be so insidious, and envy and all that. And when I consciously did some what seemed to be such silly things, like started a gratitude journal and started my day off thinking about what I had to be thankful for, my day had a different spin.
It's not silly at all, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. I've done it myself, and it made a big difference.
Yeah. And when you're constantly comparing yourself with other people, which we all tend to do, you know, but if you're able to really look at that for what it is, which is an absurdity, and to go back to that state of gratitude, I think that makes a big difference.
Wow. Well, thank you. I love all your answers. So I wanted to take a couple minutes to talk about my little cancer story. It's about a woman. Her name's Nina Williams, and I knew her since I was 10 years old. And I don't talk about her a lot, but occasionally I get into some situations where I can talk about her. But I see her as an angel on earth type of thing. I'm not trying to get religious or too hippy dippy or anything. But I knew this woman since I was 10 years old, and she had a son, and we were the exact same age. And my family was close with her family, and when we were little, we used to vacation at the same place and everything. And she got cancer. And she got really, really bad cancer. And I didn't really know that much about it. And then she got, when I was really young, you know, and then she got better for a while. But as I got a little bit older into my teens and stuff, that she got it back. It came back. I don't know all the language, but I'm going to just not worry about that part. But this woman had gone through, and I want to get somebody on at some point onto the show to talk about hospice and end-of-life care and everything. Because this woman, to this very day, I'm 51 years old, and I met this woman when I was 10 years old. And when I was about 22 years old, I was there when she died. And this woman had the most incredibly positive and powerful, like, attitude. And she looked into my eyes and said, you know, don't let what's happening to me bring you down, and don't give up on life and everything. And it's just a story that, you know, and this woman has just been with me and a part of my life and for all these years. And I just wanted to have an opportunity to share that with you. It turns out that her son, John, who was a friend of mine, like I said, since I was 10 years old, he ended up dying from the exact same kind of cancer when he was 40 years old. And this guy was married with two little kids. He was mostly a vegetarian, rode his bicycle to work, played sports. I mean, he didn't really drink or do drugs or anything, and he was just an amazing contributor and stuff. And he ended up dying with almost the same age. Hmm. They were both around 40. He was around 40, 41, and she was 42, 43 years old. Hmm. And I don't really understand it. And we were talking about this earlier about, you know, it's a crapshoot. Cancer is a crapshoot, and life is a crapshoot. But I, from what I gather from you, and from how I know you very little, and the feeling that I get from you and the work that you're doing at Cancer Lifeline, we have an opportunity to contribute and participate in a really powerful and positive attitude in the lives of the people around us, no matter what we're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And we need the kind of people and the kind of programs and stuff that you're doing to help us be able to do that, because some of us may not feel that way on our own, and we need mm-hmm. people that can love us and support us and show us. So anyhow, I just wanted to share that. So how can people get the word out about Cancer Lifeline? What kind of support do you need, and what kind of volunteer type of stuff are you looking for, and how do people get involved in all that?
People can certainly call if they're interested in volunteering. There's helping with classes. There's potentially teaching. You know, you go through an interview process, but, you know, teaching a class. There's we have our big signature event. It'll be next March. It's our big fundraiser. We always need help with that. It's a luncheon at the Westin. We need administrative work. We need front desk receptionists. So people can call the line and basically ask for a volunteer packet that can be sent to them.
Great. Well, why don't you give us the contact phone numbers or any emails or websites or anything that you want to share?
Sure. The local number is 206-297-2500. That's the emotional support line. And then the 800 number is 800-255-5505. And people can always get in touch with me by email at bbrownstein, brown like the color, STEIN, at cancerlifeline.org.
And the website, I imagine, is cancerlifeline.org.
Yes.
Great. So aside from the big thing in March, you said, is there any other upcoming events or information or offers that you want to share with us right now before we go?
I mean, there'll be all sorts of classes. You can go online and see the complete roster of classes at all four sites, the three hospital sites and the main site. I mean, it's just it's too large to go through.
This book right here is it's got a lot of stuff in here.
Yeah.
Super. Well, we always like to end out with any wise advice or helpful hints, or words of wisdom that you got for us?
Have fun.
Have fun. Great. Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
So you've been listening to episode 35 of Greener Views. Thank you, Basha, for joining us. On our next show, we plan to talk to, I have no idea, I can't remember, but you can look that up on the website, and we will have a show next week. And on behalf of Randy and Michael and myself, I say thank you. We really want your feedback, so email or call us with ideas about guests or topics or opinions about the show. info@greenerviews.net. The phone number is 206-650-4587. And we're also looking for interns and people help us out with marketing and production and social media and all that fun stuff. Anybody interested in advertising or sponsoring or donating, please contact us. You can check out, and please do check out ambrosiadigitalmedia.com, greenerviews.net, youtube.com/greenerviews, and healthyhomecast.com. So on behalf of all of us, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. Greener Views is part of the Healthy Homecast Network. Check out all their conscientious and sustainably focused podcast programs and businesses at healthyhomecast.com. Greener Views is created, developed, and produced by Daryl Whalen. Our audio engineer is Randy Parcell. Our video producer is Michael Schwartz of ambrosiadigitalmedia.com. Music for this episode was provided by slapjazz.com, danfajans.bandcamp.com, and jdhobson.com. Your feedback is important. Please feel free to contact us with any comments or questions, including suggestions for guests and program topics. You can call us at 206-650-4587. or send a direct email to info@greenerviews.net. Be sure to check back often. New episodes coming soon.
You're